It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. Very few television shows are as timeless as The Andy Griffith Show. Generations know the song, the characters, and the fictitious small town that set the template for sitcoms to follow. Journalist Daniel DeVisay has taken a look at the behind-the-scenes lives of the men who played Sheriff Andy Taylor and his deputy, Barney Fife. For his new book, Andy and Don, The Making of a Friendship and a Classic American TV Show, DeVisay interviewed a long list of cast, crew, agents, and friends. And having family ties to Don Knotts, DeVisay had access to some of the most personal reflections of the late comic star. And we welcome Daniel DeVisay to the show. Daniel, thanks for being with us today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us about your family connection to Don Knotts.
Well, it's easy. Back in the 80s, Sophie was my girlfriend, and then we got married. And her older sister, Francie, around the same time, started up a relationship with Don. And I don't remember when it first came up in conversation. And I believed Sophie because I loved her and trusted her. But boy, what a, you know, that was quite a lot to swallow. But yeah, I met him around 1991. We went to Disney World. We were living in Florida. And Don was the VIP, you know, guest. He led the parade. And we got a backstage tour. And man, he was like Elvis. You know, we just got mobbed everywhere we went. I mean, he got mobbed. I was in the center of the mob with him. And yeah, so he was my brother-in-law, and I got to spend some wonderful time with him, particularly in the 90s. We lived in L.A., in Long Beach, actually, and they lived nearby. So we would see them on, you know, holidays, and went to Vegas together once or twice, and it was a blast.
Well, you have that family connection, but you've been a reporter for a long time and covered a lot of stories, not really entertainment beat stories. What prompted you to write about this relationship between Don Knotts and Andy Griffith?
Yeah, right. Well, I covered all sorts of stuff at the Washington Post, Miami Herald, some other papers, all over the map, but it was mostly hard news. And then, a few years ago, I got involved in writing a book called I Forgot to Remember, which was the story of an amnesiac named Sue Mack, and I just basically helped her write her own story. She'd been hit on the head by a ceiling fan and lost all her memory. It was a great book club kind of book, really wonderful psychological memoir, I think. And anyway, so I was finishing up work on that, and I was on a book leave, and, you know, it just struck me, now's my chance to write something about this guy. I'd always wanted to, but I'd always been busy with my newsroom jobs. He had passed on by that time, and I think Andy had just died, too. But I just wanted to, I guess, pay homage to him, and then it turned into a project about both of them and the friendship, and the reason for choosing that as a subject is that I think that friendship was kind of the beating heart of that wonderful show, which I watched and loved on reruns when I was a kid in Chicago, and I just wanted to pay tribute, you know, to that relationship.
Yeah, it seems like it was on every day on WGN at least once.
At least once. And now, you mentioned I'd forgotten what channel it was on. I think I probably watched it before or after the Cub games.
And during the rain delays, I think that was their go-to.
Yeah, it was a wonderful childhood memory for me. And the funny thing about this show, I am from Chicago, from the city. I mean, I didn't learn to drive till I was like 23. I was a city guy. But it resonated with me. And I can't even really explain that. I think it was this show that perfectly captured kind of the essence of small-town America or Americana. You had that extra syllable on there. And no other show did quite so good of a job of capturing the experience of small-town American life. And it was not really making fun of or mocking that life. It was really a heartfelt tribute to it with a lot of humor thrown in. And so, you know, anybody you know who's from an actual small town, which I ain't, really, really connects with the show that way. In my case, you know, growing up in the city, I just connected with the peace and kind of tranquility that I felt when I saw it. And it just made me feel kind of happy, you know? And what's wrong with that?
Well, given that tone of the show and the persona of the two characters that Andy Griffith and Don Knotts portrayed, these were good-hearted people. It's interesting to see in your book that both of these actors came up in rough upbringings. In the case of Don Knotts, a very disturbing household at times.
Yeah. To really appreciate their childhoods, go back and watch Sling Blade, that movie with Billy Bob Thornton. Both Don and Andy fell in love with that movie, and they became good friends with Billy. And there's a reason for that. That's like the dark side of Mayberry. It's, if you remember that story, it's a much darker, darker tale than anything ever written for the Andy Griffith Show. And their real lives were more like a darker version of Mayberry. I think a lot of their memories were sweetened for the CBS show. So Don, who was born 2 years earlier, grew up in coal country in Morgantown, West Virginia. And he grew up pretty poor. The mom ran a rooming house, and Don had nowhere to sleep but the kitchen. And he slept there in a cot. And he had these older, kind of roughhousing brothers. And he had a father who was mentally ill, who would occasionally come after him with a butcher knife, because he would be just raging, and he was committed a couple times. So that was him. In Andy's case, he grew up in North Carolina, and his father was, I believe, a foreman at a furniture factory. There was probably a bit more money in that family, and it was only split three ways because Andy was an only child. But Andy's childhood was somewhat traumatic as well, and I know this from talking to people who were his friends in childhood. He got teased and kind of, I don't know, benevolently bullied, maybe not so benevolently, because he was kind of this clean, scrubbed, well-dressed, sort of maybe mama's boy on the poor side of town from the wrong side of the tracks amongst a lot of other kids who were kind of rough-and-tumble kids. So there was that. And then also, I think Andy felt extremely conscious of his sort of class identity, and he really felt sort of inferior. And I think some of the kids from the wealthier side of Mount Airy made him feel that way. And, you know, he would occasionally get called things like white trash, and he never really forgot that.
We're talking with Daniel DeVisay. His new book, Andy and Don, is about both Andy Griffith and Don Knotts, as well as the making of The Andy Griffith Show. So, Daniel, these two men had a relationship that started before The Andy Griffith Show. How did they get to know each other, and how good of friends were they before the show started?
Yeah. They both wound up in New York, which is, I guess, where you went when you were from that part of the country and wanted to make it. It's funny because it was the early, mid-50s, and I guess it didn't even maybe occur to them to go to Hollywood. They went to New York, and both of them talked their way into roles in what was to be the hit play No Time for Sergeants. That was one of those kind of franchises. It was a big book, and then it became a big television play, and then a Broadway play, and then a movie. Andy talked his way into the lead role, and that was a big deal for Andy because he wasn't all that well known. He'd had this one hit record called What It Was Football. So he just charmed his way into the part. And Don sort of charmed his way into a lesser role, a smaller role in the same production. And if you read the book, you'll see how close both of them came to not getting the role at all. And then it's one of those things where they never would have met, or probably not. So they did meet backstage. I think Andy was whittling, if you'd imagine that. And Don walked up to him. Don, of course, recognized the star of the show. And, you know, he needed no introduction. But Andy recognized Don not through his face, but through his voice. Don had been on a radio production, the Bobby Benson Show, which was really for kids, and he played an old-timer, Windy Wales, even though he was in his 20s. And Andy recognized his voice from that radio show. Andy had listened to it while he was driving around from one nightclub gig to the next. And they became fast friends. They hung out all the time. They shared a sort of Southern heritage, which wasn't all that common on Broadway, and they loved to get together and gossip and just share stories about their childhoods.
Not only did Don Knotts almost not be part of the original production of The Andy Griffith Show, there almost wasn't a Barney Fife. This was something that really was the initiative of Don Knotts to work his way onto the show.
That's right, yeah. A lot of the people who wound up cast into that show, those were sort of gut instinct sort of decisions by the producers, and they didn't know if they were going to work out. It started out as a pilot on the Danny Thomas Show, which it's somewhat remembered, but it was a huge hit. It was sort of Danny meets Andy Griffith, and that was the pilot for the Andy Griffith Show. And Andy was on the pilot, and I think Opie was on it, and then Frances Bavier, Aunt B, was on it, but she wasn't Aunt B. And there was a drunk character, but it wasn't Hal Smith, the guy who wound up playing Otis. So it was all kind of mixed up. And Don wasn't on there either. He was in the viewing audience. He was at the house of Pat Harrington, Schneider the handyman in later life. and watched the pilot and loved the pilot. And he and Andy were a little bit out of touch at that point. I think Don had moved west with the Steve Allen Show, which was his first big role. So he called Andy the next day. This has been termed the most important telephone call in the history of television. Don called Andy and said, "Oh, gee, Ange, that's a great show you got working there. How would you like to have a deputy?" And that was that.
Well, this worked out pretty well because Andy Griffith was a little insecure about how he might be portrayed in the show. He kind of thought, since he had been a comedic actor that was Southern, that he would be portrayed as a rube. And so the addition of Barney made Andy seem kind of like a wiser, smarter guy, more like a leading man.
Go back and watch that pilot on YouTube. He was a bumpkin in the pilot. It was maybe his worst fears realized. I think Sheldon Leonard, who was a genius, the two characters on Big Bang Theory are named after him, Sheldon Leonard. He came up with the show, and it was a brilliant idea, but he thought that Andy might end up being sort of a Will Stockdale character, like the goofball from the Sergeant's play, and wanted Andy to be the whirling dervish of comedy at the center of the story. Andy didn't like it. His gut feeling was that it wasn't going to work, it wasn't going to last. He thought we'd last maybe a few episodes, and that would be it. So watch that pilot. It's crazy because it's so different. Don's arrival shifted the center of gravity, and by the first day when they saw the dailies, they knew that they needed to sign Don up for a long-term contract because that wasn't the initial plan. By the second episode, which is titled Manhunt, and which is a brilliant episode, by then, everyone, including Andy, knew that Don was going to be the comedic center from that point on of the show, and that Andy was going to be the surrogate for us, the audience, sitting back, watching and loving and enjoying all this wonderful comedy playing out around him as this sort of father-like, sort of Lincoln-esque, dignified persona. Remember, the audience, a lot of the audience was, you know, people in New York and Chicago and Bloomington and everywhere, and we needed somebody to help us transcribe and sort of synthesize all this crazy small-town hijinks, and that was Andy. He was a surrogate for us.
If you're just joining us, we're talking this hour with Daniel DeVisay. He is the author of a dual biography of Andy Griffith and Don Knotts. It is called Andy and Don, The Making of a Friendship and a Classic American TV Show. Daniel, thanks for sticking around this hour.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So before we took the break, we were talking a little bit about the friendship of Andy Griffith and Don Knotts, how they met each other on Broadway, how they both were from the South, so they kind of bonded, and Don sort of talked his way into becoming a character that hadn't been created when they launched the Andy Griffith Show. So they were friends. They would spend long hours talking on the set. What was the rest of the cast like as far as how did everyone else integrate behind the scenes?
Well, you go back to the Danny Thomas show. I guess Danny Thomas was kind of a yeller, and I guess that when Andy was on that set, Danny Thomas, for a week doing the pilot, he experienced a lot of yelling, a lot of screaming, and he didn't like it. And he said, "Boy, Sheldon Leonard, I don't know if I can go through with this. This is too much, all this yelling and screaming." And Sheldon said, "Well, Andy, Danny runs that show, the Danny Thomas show, and that's the way he likes to have it. He likes it to be boisterous and loud and sort of combative. But on your show, the Andy Griffith show, it can be whatever you want it to be, and you can set the tone. And if you set a warm, friendly, convivial tone, then that's what you'll get." And that was what Andy did. He took his role as the boss of that production very seriously, and he wanted to be a sort of benevolent kind of father figure in the studio. So I guess every day when they would gather to work on that week's episode, they would laugh, they would sing, they would play music, they would play practical jokes on each other. Andy would take the lead in that. He loved to throw a film canister onto the floor, probably the linoleum floor when Don was napping, wake him up. And there was a guy, Lee Greenway, who was the makeup guy, and he was a very boisterous fellow, and he hung out with Andy, and I think he could play the banjo or something. And they would play and sing and have a riotous good time. And almost everyone joined in that or would sit in the audience, you know, stand back and just appreciate it and enjoy it. People would show up when they weren't shooting, you know, just to see what was happening that week, especially to see if Don and Andy had a skit they were going to unfurl. The only actor in the group who apparently didn't share in all the frivolities was Frances, Aunt B. Apparently she was a little more serious, a little more sober. Not to say the others weren't serious about their craft, but I think Frances just didn't like all that hijinks. She definitely didn't like swearing, and I think I read that she once hit George Lindsay over the head with an umbrella when he cussed.
She did get along with Jim Nabors, though. That was the one cast member that she had a warmer relationship towards.
Well, yeah, I'd read all sorts of references to Aunt B this and Aunt B that, so I asked everybody I could, and most of the people I spoke to sort of carefully, discreetly made it be known that she didn't really approve of what was going on around her and that sort of suffered all this craziness, but not gladly. Well, Jim, when I interviewed Jim in Hawaii, oh boy, he adored Francis. She really took him under her wing, gave him advice on how to be a television actor, because he'd been a nightclub guy himself, and he was actually brand new to performing. But he did everything big and loud and large, like he was on stage. And she said, you know, honey, you've got to back that off a little bit. The television can see every nuance, every inflection in your voice, and every nuance on your face, so you don't have to be so big and broad. So she taught him sort of how to act on television. And they went and hung out together on the weekends, and I think they went antiquing. And he stood up for her with Andy, too. I think there were some times when Andy was being a little grumpy toward Frances, and Jim would say, you be nice to that woman. She's a very good actor, you know.
So Jim Nabors recently married his longtime partner, and I don't know if that was the first time he officially, you know, talked about his sexuality in public, but you quote him in the book as saying that he never kept his sexuality a secret, even from his coworkers in Mayberry.
Yeah, I believe that. I think it's true. Both Don and Andy, and I think the rest of the cast, I interviewed Rance Howard, Ronnie's father. I interviewed Ron Howard. I don't remember asking Ron this specifically, but I think everybody I spoke to knew Jim was gay. Now, remember, these were Hollywood actors in the 60s, and so maybe they were a little farther on in accepting this than maybe the rest of society. But it's also true that Dick Link, who was Jim's manager, told me that he worked just as hard to head off any press coverage of that, because the consuming public out there might have had some issues with it. He told me that he would sort of run interference whenever he thought that someone might be writing something about Jim's private life. So I think both things are true. I think it's true that Jim was out and open, and I think it's true that Dick Link, the manager, occasionally had to step in and maybe stop somebody from writing something or insinuating something. But that was the world they lived in back then, right?
Well, that wasn't the only thing that they tried to keep a lid on. People were interested in the private life of the star of the show as well. And there was lots of fuel there for that fire if the tabloids wanted to write about Andy Griffith.
Yeah, there were tabloids back in the 60s, and they did make a lot out of, well, I found some articles that sort of amplified the friction that came to rise up between Andy and Barbara, his first wife. They were, you know, soulmates and married for a very long time, but there were problems between them by that time. And both Andy and Don succumbed to the temptations of Hollywood to some extent, and my book chronicles some of that. I won't go into a lot of depth out of deference to those two families, but I will say this, though. You know, if you compare those two guys to sort of the average Hollywood star, I think their lives were pretty tame.
We're talking with Daniel DeVisay. His new biography is called Andy and Don, The Making of a Friendship and a Classic American TV Show. You know, we talked about Jim Nabors, and it's so interesting to think about how the Andy Griffith Show started to become this franchise and spun off Gomer Pyle, USMC, which the Griffith Show producers were behind. And people who have enjoyed the show in reruns maybe didn't realize what a breakout star Don Knotts was. In some ways, he became bigger than the show. He made a bunch of movies. I think the first one he made was in the last year he was on the Andy Griffith Show with the incredible Mr. Limpet. And he picked up a ton of Emmy Awards for playing Barney Fife. How did Andy and the rest of the production think about Don's rising star quality?
Yeah, the Griffith Show didn't get a lot of love from the critics or from the Television Academy. It's maybe easy to forget now that I couldn't find any really ecstatic reviews of the show during the years it was on the air. You know, there was no Metacritic back then, but the reviews were pretty lukewarm. I think people were sort of politely disdainful toward this sort of Southern show, and maybe there's some regional bias there. Likewise, the Griffith Show, apart from Don, let's forget Don for a moment, won exactly one Emmy, and that was given to Frances for her work as Aunt B. The show itself never won an Emmy. Andy was never even nominated for an Emmy, and this in spite the fact that he turned in a brilliant performance year after year, I think. But Don won five, not in a row, but five Emmys for the role of Barney, and that was, I think, a first at the time. There had been no actor who'd won five Emmys for the same character on the same show. Now, of course, everybody in the production loved that, but Andy, I think, and Don had a bit of a healthy competition, maybe. Andy got a lot of financial reward for the Griffith Show, and I think maybe Don was a bit resentful of that. And Don got all this artistic recognition, and I'm certain that Andy was somewhat resentful of that. Apparently, he really couldn't bring up that topic during all the years they were on the show together. It was just sort of too sore of a subject. So Don left it alone. Andy left it alone. In later years, Andy could joke about it. And I mean, I heard him joke about it, I think, with Larry King, you know, but this is decades later.
So when Don Knotts left the show, was that something that he just felt he could go off and star in movies, which he did? He was in a long string of hit kind of Disney movies as the comedic lead, and he didn't want to do the show anymore? Or how did that happen? Did he want to stay?
It's confusing, and I'm almost afraid to even try to summarize what the book says, and I'm not even sure the book is. It's a complicated episode, but here's what I think happened. It was year five of the show. Andy was planning to wrap it up after 5 years, and everyone in the cast, I think, was expecting that. So Don went ahead and made a sort of handshake deal to make films with Universal, the first of which was going to be that Mr. Chicken film. Well, meantime, Andy was persuaded to keep going. I talked to Dick Link, his manager, about this. You know, they offered him like $1 million a year to keep, and that was a lot of money in 1965. So Andy said, all right, I'll stay. And then one of the first orders of business then was to see if Don would stay, because he was, as you say, kind of the most celebrated character on the show. Officially, the problem was that Don had this film deal, but I found out in researching the book that apparently Don did consider staying on the show for a sixth or seventh or eighth year. It would have been interesting to see them, you know, in color. But he wanted an ownership stake. Remember I said I think he was a little bit resentful of Andy's financial windfall from this show, and he wanted a piece of it. And they couldn't agree on terms for that, and I think that's a failure of negotiation. These two guys weren't negotiators. They weren't managers. They were performers, and they just couldn't come to terms. There was also apparently talk on Don's part of them forming a permanent comedy partnership like Martin and Lewis, and apparently Andy was worried about that because look at what happened to Martin and Lewis. They didn't, you know, stay close friends. So it just crumbled. But I need to stress that their friendship endured. And I don't think a business disagreement was ever going to come between them as friends, and it didn't.
How much of that friendship extended way beyond the show? Were they just people who had intensely been friendly coworkers on the set for a long time, or did they have a friendship that went on after they went their separate ways?
Yeah, I call this a Hollywood friendship, and I don't mean by that it was phony in any way. Quite the contrary. I don't understand Hollywood too well, but I think if you talk to actors, you'll find that they form a really intense bond when they're working on a production sort of intensely 12 hours a day, day in, day out, probably seeing more of each other than their spouses, right? So if you think of somebody you were real close to maybe in college or high school, some of the best years of our lives, and then you maybe don't see that person all the time, but 20, 30 years later, you're still really, really close. I think it was that kind of friendship. They had these really intense, intense times together, just hours and hours a day, day in, day out, every week for years, just constantly together in this wonderful setting that both of them would treasure forever. And they had such love for each other and such reverence for that time in their lives that they could just always reconnect. And I think they cultivated the friendship. They talked a lot, I think, on the phone. They saw each other whenever they could. Near the end of Don's life, Andy was back in L.A., and I think he'd moved back largely to be near Don because I think he was inspired by Don's work ethic. They both were men who really always wanted to work and always wanted to keep finding more work. So they had some wonderful times together right at the end.
Daniel DeVisay is the author of Andy and Don, The Making of a Friendship, and a classic American TV show all about the Andy Griffith Show and the two men who started it. Daniel, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.